lock up for 30 seconds. You might learn something.
Welcome to Plum Love Foods Live, the number one live audio culinary industry show for chefs by chefs. Hosted by multi-time Food Network winner, award-winning chef, TV host and global icon, and national treasure, at least in his mind, Chef Plum. So close that saute station, make sure the grill is off, and grab that shift drink, because we're about to mess up your mise en place. Here's Chef Plum.
It's like the blind leading the blind, it feels like. Good Lord. I don't even know what I just... Here, let me just play the music. There it is. It's Dave's music. It's almost like deja vu, Dave. I feel like we've done this before.
I think so.
I don't know what just happened there. Like, I tried to start the show. Everything was going fine. Everything looked fine. For some reason, none of the audio was working, but I just restarted. Everything's rock and roll right now, and I love how people are sending me messages going, I just started listening, but then it messed up and said, I'm like, yeah, I know. I just, if you were listening, I told you I was restarting because I'm an asshole. I guess you weren't listening close.
It just happens.
Anyway, guys, I apologize for the late start and everything kind of weird tonight for those of you who are just now tuning in. We had to start and restop, but it's going to be all fine. I was shooting a commercial tonight, and everything kind of got screwy on me. So we got that all fixed. Everything's good now. Welcome to Plum Love Foods Live. It's your boy, Chef Plum, and, of course, my man Dave Boredom with me. Dave, good evening, brother. How was your night tonight?
It was awesome. I got out early, so no complaints at all.
That's good news. That's good news. I was wearing spandex.
Yeah, that's probably like what started screwing everything up was the spandex.
I bet you're right.
Like the static electricity maybe build up. You know?
Here's the thing too. I'm really excited about our guest tonight, and I kind of feel terrible that this happened on his show because this. I mean, literally, we never have tech issues. Not since we switched to this new platform, and this is the first time I've had a tech issue.
Yeah, actually, I'm pretty sure that's right. You've been on it for how long so far?
I mean, it's been since last June.
Yeah, so it was a pretty solid run. Report it so they can fix it.
Yeah, I will. It's a pain in the ass. But anyway, man, excited to talk tonight for our guests. I'm a giant. I'm into fishing so much, and I love it, so I can't wait to talk to Traveler from Salmon and Sable in just 1 minute. But Dave, first, before we get moving, and we're going to jump right into the interview. I'm not going to have a long intro here in the front, but I got to talk a little bit about Mohegan Sun Wine and Food Festival coming up on January 26th, 27th, and 28th. What a fun weekend that's going to be. I'll be there. A lot of other great chefs will be there. But the fun thing is, man, for the first time ever, they're doing a Friday night kickoff show. Have you seen this yet? Have you heard about this?
Yeah, I actually have.
That's not what you're supposed to say. You're supposed to say, yeah, I have, but tell me more about it, Chef. That we're setting up a live read right now.
Oh, that whole segue thing. Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, tell me more.
Yeah, so basically it's a lot of fun. It's going to be the night where they're calling it the preview tasting. It's myself and our friend Kevin DeChaney is going to be there. We're doing demos. I'm hosting the night. In front of the live crowd, there's going to be giveaways. I'm also doing a demo in front of the crowd. So is Kevin. Lots of alcohol, lots of drinking, lots of great food, and, of course, great people all happening at the Sun Wine and Food Festival. It's one of my favorite events of the year, Dave. I'm not going to lie. It's really fun.
Yeah, last year was pretty awesome, to say the least, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, it was by far one of the best events I've ever done. They take great care of you there. You have a great time. Everyone's having so much fun. And honestly, I think it just keeps getting bigger and bigger, and you can tell because they're adding days like this one. That's called the Grand Tasting Preview. It's happening on the 26th. That's a Friday, I believe, Dave. Check on that. Make sure I'm right. It's the 26th. But what they've got going on right now is they've given me a promo code. It's FRI Wine is a discount code to get 20% off that ticket. That ticket's only $50 too, Dave. It's a really cheap ticket.
Nice. That's pretty decent.
$50, and it should be a lot of fun, man. That's happening on the 26th. Come by and see us. We're also going to announce here very soon. We're doing the live podcast from there as well. We might do it in the suite. We might do it out in front of people. We haven't decided yet. But either way, it's happening Friday night. So what you do is you go to the tasting, the Grand Tasting Preview, then you come hang out with us for the podcast. It's going to be a lot of fun. What a fun night that sounds, right?
Yeah, I'm excited, man. I can't wait. Honestly, what is it? It's just like only 2 weeks out.
Uh-huh. God, it's so close. I know it's so close, and I'm so excited about the dish I'm doing.
And the week leading up to that is a whole other build up towards it, like the Food and Wine Week, I guess it was called. Yeah. I don't know the actual name, but it's going to be intense, and I'm excited. I'm ready.
So check it out. Go to
ass kicked that week.
Yeah, we will. Go to MoheganSun.com. You can get tickets for this event. I'm also going to post it on the Instagram, of course. We might be doing a ticket giveaway as well, but more importantly, it's going to be a give. We have a promo code Fry Wine, F-R-I-W-I-N-E, to get 20% off your ticket. Come see us. It's going to be a lot of fun. Sun Wine and Food Festival at Mohegan Sun, January 26th, 27th, and 28th. Dave, you know, I feel like that we keep trying to wrap up and put a bow around this whole event that we did with the Navy and how fun it was. But, man, we just met so many great people. And tonight our guest from Salmon and Sable, Traveler, man, I tell you what, this the salmon that he gave us for this event was just outstanding, out of this world, man. You saw some of it.
Yeah, it was definitely beautiful. It was probably, I think, some of the best salmon I've seen so far.
I agree with that. And I sent you that video they did too, right? You saw it.
Yeah, check that out. It was pretty cool, like how it all happens right there.
Right.
Like it's not being shipped out. It's not. I mean, it's not being sent somewhere else to be processed. It's all happening right there.
Well, dude, I mean, as chefs, like, you know, we crave control over things. And, I mean, knowing where things come from is part of having control. So I want to get into it, man. Let's talk to him. Let's get into it. Let's get him on the show here, man. Ladies and gentlemen, from Salmon and Sable, our good friend Traveler, my new friend Traveler, who's been putting up with my nonsense. You know why he's putting up with it, Dave? Because he's in Hawaii right now. He's on his vacation. Traveler, good evening, brother. How are you?
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me. It's awesome.
Dude,
I thought it was like a remedial accounting show, you know, for my daughter or something when I came on called accounting.
Yeah, I had to have Dave count it because of the soundtrack. Here's the thing, and I'm being completely honest here, Traveler. This is like this show. I mean, we are top in iTunes food. We are top in, like, Spotify. Like, the show does really well. But occasionally shit like that does happen, and I apologize. Like, of all the guests, like, you and I we're new friends, so, like, you're not used to me saying dumb things. And so that just happens. Like, give it a year and you'll be like, it's just Plum. He's whatever. But you'll learn to love me. I promise you'll learn to love me, brother. I seriously. But first of all, enough of that. Thank you for taking the time, man. I know you're a super busy guy. Like, you have a lot going on. You're in Hawaii right now. Why are you in Hawaii?
Actually, I don't have a lot going on. I just kind of chill all winter.
Hawaii. What are you doing in Hawaii?
I grew up between the Big Island of Hawaii and Alaska, and so, you know, there's no place better than Alaska during the summers, and there's no place worse than Alaska during the winters. So yeah. We figured out a long time ago, when I was a kid, well, my parents did anyway, that you know, living in Hawaii during the winter is the way to go, and then there's just nowhere like Alaska during the summer. But, you know, during the winter, it's I don't know, it's not for me. Not a lot of light, you know.
Yeah, yeah. How is the light there? Like in the winter? What's the time frame for it?
Well, it's a big state, you know, and so the southern part of the state gets more light than the northern part. My cousin is a fisherwoman, and she also works on the North Slope doing ice roads for oil companies. And I just talked to her on the phone. We talk about fishing frequently, and she just flew up there, and that's the North Slope, you know, right up basically North Pole, you know, where Santa lives, and. Yeah. and she said it's dark. It's just dark all the time. The top of the sun comes above the horizon, then goes back down. So it's just, you know, like living on the dark side of the moon. It's a bummer.
But people, I guess, live there. They get used to it, right? Like, they get used to living there, and that's kind of what they do.
Yeah, but, you know, sometimes they go crazy and kill their families too. Oh. So.
that's great news. That's good to know. Do me a favor. You stay away from there. How about that?
Yeah. No, I'm sitting here sunburned, no shirt. Actually, I have a shirt on, but, you know, I'm sunburned.
I've got the spandex.
I was going to recommend your technology problems, you know, just doing computer work naked is, you know, I don't know, it seems to solve my problems.
Oh, well, I'm not wearing pants right now, so that's great news. Dave, what are you wearing? Since we're all getting so close.
Socks.
Oh, Jesus Christ. So, Trevor, tell me, man, so... just talk a little bit about what you do. I want to get just like a brief overview, and then we'll kind of get into it and points and stuff. But I mean, you salmon fish in Alaska, and like the small like hut. It's incredible.
yeah, shack is another way to put it.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm no, hut sounds fancy. Shack sounds hobo. So, you know, it's more shack.
So it's more shack.
I love it. It's the real problem is that I'm like. I'm right on the beach, and people are, oh, you got a cabin on the beach in Alaska? And I'm like, yeah, when we have a high tide and a northwest wind and a big sea and all that, the waves come over the bank and they're underneath the cabin. It's like living in Venice. You know, you got to put boots on to get the outhouse. And it's like we're right on the water, which is amazing, but, you know, you get a bad storm and it gets real. I found my three-wheeler floating upside down one time when we had a bad storm, and cleaned the carburetor out, and she still is going strong. Wow. 1983 red. Yeah, so we fish there in Bristol. Bristol Bay is on the north side of the Alaska Peninsula. It's the biggest sockeye salmon fishery on Earth. And so I'm really, really proud to be part of that fishery. And I've been fishing, commercial fishing, since I was 15 years old. Not absolutely every single year, but a good many of those years I've been in a lot of fisheries. And the last 10 years, well, going on 10 years, I've been on the Ugashic River in Bristol Bay. And when I got tired of sadistic skippers screaming at me all the time when I was a crewman, I wanted to do my own thing and be my own fisherman. And you know, that's kind of how fishing works. You got to kind of climb the ladder. You'd be a crewman, right. You're a crew for a while. And then you know, if you really love it, you get your own permit. And so I could get into any fishery, as long as I had the money, because the permits are really expensive. And that's part of the reason Alaska is such a incredibly, their fisheries are managed so, so well, better than almost anywhere else in the world. Because they take it so seriously. And so they have a whole permit system, and you can't just go catch whatever you want, whenever you want. It's very tightly regulated, and that's why it's such a sustainable place to fish. And so given the cash to buy the permit, I could have gone in anywhere, and I chose Ugashic River in Bristol Bay. And Bristol Bay, as I said, is the biggest wild sockeye salmon fishery in the world. Sometimes we'll get 65 million fish, and that's just sockeye back. And they're coming. Bristol Bay is a very short season. You know, Kodiak is like this protracted nightmare from my perspective in terms of how long it is. But Bristol Bay is like, most of those fish come back in like 3 weeks. It's unbelievable. And wow. So that, adage or whatever of walking across the river on fish, it's, you know, it's pretty much true in Bristol Bay, except, you know, I think people think of a little creek full of fish, but this is like almost a Mississippi sized river. And you wade out into the water to get in your dinghy to go out your skiff. And on days when they're running hard, peak season, which is usually around July 4th, they're hitting your ankles, they're jumping. Wow. If you put a little tiny like minnow net in the water, you're going to have a salmon crammed in there. It's incredible. And they're bonking the bottom of the boat. It's just unbelievable. And it's kind of like, I mean, it sounds so corny, but it's kind of the privilege of my life to be a part of something like that. And it sounds corny for me to say it, but
not at all.
It's incredible. You know, I mean, there's just like, there's these natural events around the world. And this is, in my opinion, this is like top three. And there's just all these fish coming back all in a short period of time. And it creates this amazing food for people and the whole state. I mean, the whole state's ecosystem runs on salmon. I'm not a fisheries biologist or a biologist of any kind, but I do read a lot about it. And a huge percentage of the nitrogen in the plants in Alaska, like 70%, nobody should quote me on this, but like 70% is directly from salmon. No way. They say that salmon is the lifeblood of Alaska, and it's not just like, oh, the bears get a few, the eagles get a few. The nitrogen from salmon feeds the whole ecosystem. So it's an amazing thing to be a part of. It's an amazing thing to see. And I just take so much pride in, you know, taking a couple of those fish and filleting them myself and sending them to, you know, my small customer base. I'm hoping to grow a little bit, but my small customers, customer base that just absolutely are bananas for what I send them. And every single piece, you know, was caught by me, my family, my crew, and I personally fillet every single fish because no one else in my camp can fillet. So probably shouldn't be saying that on the radio. My dad would get all pissed off.
Oh man, I mean, what an incredible story. But like, so just really, I have like 55 questions, Dave. I don't know where to start first.
Yeah.
I love what you do. I think what you do is so almost like, I don't know the word. What's the right word, Dave? Romantic? Like, it's so amazing. Like, you're out there, you're fishing, and like you're catching your fish and you're selling it to people. And it sounds such a silly thing to say, but that's so amazing. Like, it's so simple, but it's so incredible all at the same time. Especially, I've seen your product. It's outrageous. When you're out there, where you are, I mean, I gotta imagine you were talking about, like, you know, you clean the carburetor on the three wheeler, and then you know it's back up and running again. Getting parts to fix stuff must be just a pain in the ass.
Oh yeah, building anything is it triples the expense, quadruples the expense, and there's no hard, you know, there's no store, there's no roads in, there's no roads out. If you forget something, it's like you know, you can get stuff flown in, but it's serious business. You know, when I'm outside of fish camp and, you know, you need a, you forgot like one washer for your 10 bolts or whatever. And you're just like, God, and I'm like, wait a minute, there's a hardware store like 5 minutes away out of fish camp. You know, you're just like, well, washer on that bolt, you know, or,
right.
And that's a fun part of it. I mean, I'm not a particularly mechanical guy. I didn't grow up that way, but you know, I've been, you know, 10 years in this particular location. It's a lot of fun. And, yeah, so, you know, so that part's challenging. And, you know, we bring in a lot of food, but of course we have salmon there. So, you know, you're never going to starve to death. But I
mean, you guys don't have power, right? There's no power in the shack.
We actually do have power. So the quote unquote city, massive air quotes, city of Pilot Point, the town is 69 people, and I'm about a mile away from that. And there's no roads in or out. So it's a tiny little town, and they actually generate, they're getting wind power up, which I'm really excited about.
Interesting. Yeah.
And so we actually do have power, which is incredible. Cause my aunt, the cousin that I was talking about, actually, her mom, she's been setting it in Kodiak for like 40 years. And so I spent a lot of time out there when I was a kid, and they didn't have any power. And it sounds romantic having no power, but it is not romantic. It's romantic for like a day. And then you're just like, I can't do anything, you know? And what I do, I mean, I don't mind really, honestly, unless you're trying to process salmon. You can't process salmon without electricity. So the way, you know, we're pretty lucky. We've got power, and it's insanely expensive, but you know, it allows me to do what I do. And so we built our cabins. We built our you know, you need a freezer. So I had a 20-foot Connex that was just about ready to collapse from all the rust, and the only way to keep it from collapsing was to build walls inside with steel 2x6s and then spray foam the living hell out of it, and so turn it into a freezer. So, you know, that's what's the freezer resurrected the life of that Connex. Wow. So the walk-in freezer, it's, you know, rocking at negative 30 almost all the, well, negative 10 to negative 30, and we built it ourselves. It's pretty awesome.
Dude, that's incredible, man. And so, like, you talk about you have electricity, so that mean you have, does that mean you have like two plugs in the shack, or do you have, is it more?
We got a couple, but you know, you don't want to get too close to them usually because the wiring's just kind of like everywhere. So
that's incredible. That's so great.
Danger of incinerating at any moment.
That's so great. And you guys actually, when you process your salmon, you do it by hand. Like it's just you got just you in there cleaning fish all day, right?
Yeah. And that's, you know, something I'm always trying to figure out is how to, having crew out there is tough. You know, you get 20 somethings that want to, you know, have social lives, and they're stuck out in the middle of nowhere. And not everybody can do it for 3 months. And so I'm always trying to have a smaller crew rather than a bigger one, but I'm trying to also not do every single thing myself. Right. So, you know, I'm a solopreneur, whatever they call it. I'm just doing everything myself. So it's, you know, it's, I'm always trying to figure out how to do things smarter.
How do those days go? How do the days go for you? Like when you're out there and you're just getting going, maybe you've been there already for like your seasons. You're a few weeks into the season, so everything's set up and ready to go. Like, what time did your day start for you? And kind of give us a walkthrough of how that works.
Well, part of the sustainability aspect of this particular fishery and a lot of them is, you know, they manage things by you have to have a permit, so that's the first step. And then the second step is they manage it by gear. Sometimes the boat length is a factor. You can't have a boat over X length. And then the net web size, so the dimensions of the individual holes in the net, also the length of the net. There's a million regulations that govern how you fish on top of having the permit. And then the third layer of regulation is when you can fish. And so you don't just catch as much as you want whenever you want. I mean, I think some fisheries overseas are run like that, and that's not the way to go. In fact, in Hawaii, it's not far off from that. It's sort of shocking to see if it is what it appears to be. But Alaska is very, very tightly regulated. And, you know, it's interesting because Alaskans are libertarians. They don't like to be told what to do, but all the libertarians I know, they're on board with fisheries management because they just do such a good job, you know, and it's about the fish. It's not about the fishermen.
Right.
Our river has its own biologist, and just about every major river has its own biologist, and their only job is to make sure that there's fish in the future, you know. And so fishermen are always calling and, you know, him and Han about not having enough fishing time. And I call them to ask, you know, what do you think about the next couple of days? Is there going to be any fishing time? And so I talked to him frequently, and he told me, you know, hey, I don't mean this the wrong way. I don't mean to sound bad, but I don't care about you guys. I care about the fish. You know, wow. I might be paraphrasing, but he cares about the fish.
You strike me as a guy who likes that, though. Like you strike me as the kind of guy who appreciates that.
Because I don't need that many fish. You know, I think a lot of my this opportunity to set the record straight. I think a lot of my customers think, you know, I'm catching like 5 or 10 fish a day, you know, and processing them, and you know, it's bigger scale than that. But the scale of the fishery is so much bigger than that. Like, you know, I'm moving to a place with my business where I don't want to sell to the man, the quote unquote man, which is the large corporate buyers, which is where virtually everyone sells to. And you know, I'm catching my own fish and filleting my own fish and selling them direct. And so instead of selling them for 50 cents a pound, 75 cents a pound, a dollar a pound to these massive, like anonymous corporations, basically is what they are. It feels incredible to be doing it myself. Plus it's like a more profitable, sustainable way to do it, because fishing through conventional means, you know, selling to the man, you know, buying from the company store, it's kind of the same old story as like miners in the old days. It's not really a sustainable livelihood for most people. For some like highliner kind of guys, it can be, but you know, part of the reason, you know, I moved in this direction because it just feels good. It takes a beautiful creature and turns it into a beautiful food, instead of taking this beautiful creature and running it through this massive machine. And then what you get on the other side is this sad fillet and Safeway. You know, I mean, there's wild salmon all over North America. It's not hard to find wild sockeye, but it's shit. You know, like I'm on social media looking at what people are saying. Hey, I just bought this fish. Oh, I'm so excited. Salmon Sunday, whatever. And I'm happy that they're excited. And it probably is wild Alaskan fish, but it looks freaking horrible. And I mean, I can just see it. I mean, they can't see it, but I can see it. And my fish just, you know, it looks insane, it tastes insane, and that's what you get when you do everything by hand to every single fish, you know. Amazing. And so I you know, I'm not like smarter, better than anybody else, but I don't really feel like I have any competition, because there's, you know, less than, I mean, I don't really know, but I don't think there's more people than you can count on one hand doing anything similar to what I'm doing. And I'm not sure if there's anyone doing exactly what I'm doing in terms of how small and, you know, how small and intimate it is and where it's happening, all of it in one spot, you know?
Well, dude, that's what really turned me on to you the most, was that it is. I mean, it's you out there fishing and catching fish. And, you know, I know that you do some, like, is it line fishing where you have a line out and you kind of pull in? Or how does that work? Because I've also heard some friends of mine who have gone fishing in Alaska. I have yet to do it. It's on my bucket list. I think it's probably going to happen in the next couple of years. However, I've heard like when you get them in season, I mean, it's almost like you just can, you throw a hook in the water and you're going to get one.
Yeah. I mean, that's, you know, there's sport fishing and there's commercial fishing, and there is commercial fishing that's hook and line, but that's a pretty small portion of the fish caught. So I'm fishing with small, short nets from shore. So what I do is called set netting. There's a lot of different ways to catch fish and they're all carefully regulated. And what I do is set netting. Part of the reason I like it is because we're fishing out of small open skiffs. I like small boats. I always tell people I'm a fisherman, or I'm a foodie trapped in a fisherman's body. I'm not really like one of these career fishermen, like most of my peers that sit around and talk about, you know, oh, I'm going to fish 5 1/4 web instead of 5 1/8, or, you know, listening to the radio and all the chatter. All that stuff drives me bananas. You know, I'm about the wild creature and I'm about the food. I'm not about all the other nonsense. And, you know, I just want to turn out beautiful food and catch as few as I can and still make a living for myself. And so I'm real different in that regard. But it is commercial fishing. So it's short nets, from shore. And I got into set netting just because, I always kind of think of it as a gentleman's fishery. You know, people always, oh, isn't fishing so dangerous? And I mean, I don't know, I guess it is, but like, you know, crossing the road in Washington, D.C. was, I think that might have been the most dangerous thing I've ever done when we used to live out there.
Listen, you're not too far off from there. I work in New York City, and man, you're not too far off.
Yeah.
Dave, tell everybody where they can find a little more information out about Salmon and Sable and Traveler, because honestly, the whole Alaskan lifestyle, I have so many questions, but I want to get into the fish part of it, but I want people to know where they can find you, man.
All right, you can head over to their website where pre-order starts February 1st at salmonandsable.com and check them out on Instagram at salmonandsable.
Dude, I got to ask you, man. So, talking about pre-orders and whatnot and how that works, what Dave just brought up, I know you said you ship out a couple times a year, and I want to talk more about that if it's cool, but because of that, what's the story behind that? Like, why is that? Is it just because of the... You know, is it the product versus the need for it, or is it just this is when they're available?
Well, it's, you know, everything in Alaska is seasonal, and it's nice in some ways because you don't have to work your ass off all the time. But you know, it means that I'm doing all my work during the summer and the fall, and I'm catching all my fish then, and the fish aren't, you know, sockeye are basically June and July, and that's it. I mean, there's a little bit of trailing off in one or the other direction, depending on which fishery you're in, but it's a very short season, and sometimes people forget that, you know. And I mean, I guess the silver lining to that really short season is that, you know, salmon are really high fat fish, that good for you fat. And so when you have a lot of fat in something, it freezes very, very well, because the less water, and I mean, I know you know this. I'm talking to listeners, I guess. The less water in something, the better it freezes, because the cellular disruption is less violent.
Yeah,
and there's just
about that.
Fat in these. Yeah, there's just a lot of fat in these fish, and so, you know, king salmon especially. I mean, I throw that in the freezer in like an hour at negative 20, and it's like steel hard. You know, sockeye a little bit less fat, so it takes, you know, sometimes 2-3 hours. Anything less than 4 hours is technically blast frozen, and I'm always way under that. But yeah, it's just a seasonal fishery, and I initially started doing pre-orders because I like the idea of selling the fish before I go fishing, and part of that is just small business reducing risk. You know, you don't want to put up 5,000 pounds of fish or 1,000 pounds of fish or whatever and then only sell 500 of it. And so initially I started doing that just as a, you know, it really slows down your business. You're really putting a cap on your ability to make money, but it's a very safe way to proceed. And then now I've found that, you know, I don't really have to do that anymore because I've been doing it for so long, but it's a nice way to reinforce that it's a seasonal product that you know, that is valuable, and you can't just get it whenever you want by doing pre-orders. And, you know, and that's an important part of my business, is just always reinforcing to people, hey, look at what I'm doing. You know, you can buy salmon a lot of places, but this, the way I'm doing it is really, really different. And it's a hard, you know, there's a lot of messaging in there that's really challenging to convey to customers. But, you know, it's just one of the ways that I reinforce that. And it is nice to go into a fishing season knowing, you know, hey, I've sold a couple thousand pounds. I can catch a couple thousand pounds.
Yeah, you know, it's, you know, you know, what you need. You know what you need ahead of
time. Yeah, you know what you need. And yeah, exactly. And so it's a nice way to do it. Yeah.
So I got questions coming in all over the place, man. And of course, I got to go to our buddy Chief Jeremy Flake from the U.S. Navy's chiming in. We love that guy. He's a fucking psychopath traveler. We met him doing our Navy event. He had your fish. He loved it as well. He has two questions for you. I'm scrolling up here. Number one, he says, "I'm fat. Will I freeze?" Which I thought was hysterical.
Wait, he says what?
He says, "I'm fat. Will I freeze?"
Oh,
which is freaking funny. But he says, when he went to Norway, when he was in Norway, they said they had the best salmon in the world. Were they full of shit? That's his question.
Well, I don't know. They say they're the people in Norway are the happiest people in the world. So, you know, I don't know. But yeah, it's Norway. Norway is a huge source of farm salmon, and so Atlantic salmon is. There's a lot of confusion about this. Atlantic salmon versus Pacific salmon, and farm salmon versus wild salmon. And, you know, I know a lot about a lot of different things. I'm not an expert in anything, so I'm not going to say that I'm right on everything, but all my research has indicated that, you know, Atlantic salmon is a wild, beautiful species. It is endangered. There are no commercial fisheries for Atlantic salmon in North America. People sport fish them in, you know, in rivers along the Atlantic in North America, but there's no commercial fishery for it. And you can't sell fish that you've caught sport. You can only sell fish that you've caught commercial. So you come to Alaska and you catch a sockeye on a rod and reel with a sport license. You can't sell it. It's illegal.
Wow.
If it's commercially caught and then legally processed, which is what I do, then you can sell it. And that's not true in every state here in Hawaii where I winter. It's a little bit different how they do it. A quote unquote commercial license is like $50, and so the line is fuzzy. But in Alaska, it's very different. So there's no commercial. You know, so people will often say, "Oh, I've got my wild Scottish salmon," and as far as I know, as of the last year or two, there is no commercially caught Atlantic salmon available anywhere. And if that's not the case, then it's an extraordinarily small amount, and I would love to hear from the fishermen that are catching that. Wow. But basically, wild Atlantic salmon is not available anymore. It used to be, and there's some amazing fishermen in Scotland and various parts of Europe that have kept the traditions alive, but there's just so few of them because a lot of things in the Atlantic got wiped out. So Atlantic salmon was one of them. That's gone by the wayside, and I'd love to learn a lot more about that. I know a little bit, but I'd love to learn a lot more, and I'd love to see what those guys do over there. But as far as I know, there's no commercial fisheries for Atlantic salmon anymore. And the tie-in is that most farm fish is Atlantic salmon, so yeah. That's the tie. I'm not an expert on farming salmon, but it farms better. You know, it's an easy fish to farm.
You're more of an expert than the rest of us are. That's for sure. I'm gonna make you shit yourself, dude. I paid $25.
I talk out my ass all the time, and then everyone's people are like, and then I'm like, so you know, I feel like I have to preface everything.
Dude, I'll tell you right now, you're gonna shit yourself. I paid $25 a pound for some it's a really nice salmon called Scottish Pearl. It is a farm salmon, but it's a really nice farm salmon. Like I've researched where it comes from. It's good stuff.
Yep.
And, it's definitely a good salmon, but you know, the thing here is that I'm a guy who I'm a private chef. I have a client who loves great food. You know, they'll pay for great food. I want to get on this pre-order and how it goes, man. So tell me about how it works with when people get on the pre-order and order from you. How does that work? Do they select the amount of salmon to get from you, or do you tell them, hey, here's the options? How does that work?
Well, you know, before I get into that, I can just say a few more things about farm versus wild, because that's usually what people want to know a lot about. And I haven't farm fished myself. I'd sooner kill myself than do that. But my whole livelihood is predicated.
Can I just chime in 2 seconds? Because I think with farmed fish, because for the most part, you know, a lot of times with farmed fish, especially, I don't want to get into the organic part of it. I'm a giant proponent for non-organic fish. It drives me crazy. It's the worst thing in the world. Like, I don't think you get more organic than what the fuck you do. That's organic fish, what you do.
Well, beyond organic. You know, beyond organic has become a term, and I want the next step beyond that. It's just wild. Like, I'm a nut. I've been a nut for wild food my whole life, and it's not just salmon. It's just wild food, and I feel like wild food is beyond organic, you know?
Yeah.
It's like,
I like
forget about
organic.
Like, I don't even want to talk about that stuff. I just love wild food, you know?
Dude, that's what I'm saying. Like,
go wild or go home.
Yeah, I mean, like when you get these organic salmon, and Dave, you know this, but they have to call it organic because it gets labeled organic. The only way it can be labeled organic is if you force feed it, like, you know, organic corn, because it's the cheapest feed you can give it. And last time I checked, corn doesn't grow in the ocean, Dave. Right?
Right. Yeah, not at all. So
I mean,
there's a lot of fat in wild in farmed fish. There's a lot of fat in those fish for sure.
Yeah.
But the question I want to ask people is, do you want that fat in your body? You know, it's fatty, but you don't want that fat in your body. You want good fat in your body, and that's what you get from wild fish.
I don't get it, man. It makes me so frustrated because as a chef, 25 years, award-winning chef. Like, I'm not tooting my horn here, but I've been around the block a little bit. I get so annoyed when I go into these places, especially New York City, things like that, where you have these amazing stores that are going to sell you salmon for $25, $30 a pound. And then they're tooting it. Oh, this is great salmon. You're going to love it. It's organic. And I'm like, that doesn't mean that's not a good thing. Like, stop saying that.
Yeah.
That's not good. I don't want that. Like, I don't want, and they don't understand that.
Well,
I don't know how to fix it.
Food is a crazy space, you know. I mean, fraud in food is more prevalent than any other industry, as far as I know. And in seafood, it's among the worst within food. So seafood fraud is massive. And a lot of it just has to do with people are so disconnected from food. And a huge part of my mission is connecting people, you know, not just with food. I mean, there's a million people trying to do that, and that's great work. But I'm trying to connect people with wild food. And it's not just for my business. I mean, it makes you a happier human being to eat good food, but also to participate in catching wild food, catching, you know, growing, gathering, hunting, gathering. It's an amazing way to live, and it's how I've always lived my life. And so beyond my business, I just want people to participate in wild food. You know, I mean, it's got to be sustainably done, and there's a lot of responsibility that comes into that. I mean, it's interesting with our fishery. If we, I don't want to say if we weren't managed, we would do this, because I certainly wouldn't, but we could wipe out the fishery in 1 year. It would be so easy to take out every single fish in there. And so, you know, there is a lot of responsibility that comes with tapping into wild food sources. And so the state of Alaska and a lot of most fishermen, not all fishermen, but most fishermen are doing an amazing job of keeping things incredibly sustainable. And I mean, Bristol Bay is like, you know, it's the biggest sockeye salmon fishery and run in the entire planet. And it goes up and down, but it isn't just going down. You know, this coming year is supposed to be a couple of million lower than last year. But before that, we had a whole bunch of years of going up and up and up, 40 million, 50 million, 60 million, 65 million, you know, and then it goes down for a couple of years and then it comes back up again. We have a long track record of that kind of thing. So it's an amazing example of how it can be done, you know. Man. But trying to get people into wild food, you know, there is some responsibility. You have to understand it. You can't just do whatever you want.
But I think we're starting to see that, though. I really do think we're starting to see that. Like, I think we're starting to see more people care, you know, not just about having great food, but caring about where the food comes from, you know, especially in my yeah. realm, in my line of work. I mean, my clients definitely care. You know, one of the things I would love to show you, man, I don't know if we'll ever get the opportunity, if you ever come, but, you know, summertime, you know, I work out in Montauk, one of the best fishing places in the world. Maybe not for salmon, but, you know, ocean fishing, saltwater fishing is Montauk. Unbelievable. I work out there all summer long, and, you know, I'm friends with tons of fishermen out there. And honestly, like, you know, I have a buddy of mine who's a scallop fisherman, and I go to his boat and I get scallops off his boat, and I know where they came from, and I don't mind paying for it. Like, it's fine with me.
Yeah.
Like, for me, it almost feels good. Like, I'd rather give him the money than give, you know, like you said, Safeway the money or Stop and Shop the money. Because that man's out there busting his ass, you know, catching wild scallops out in the goddamn ocean, you know. Yeah. And he's giving – and not, how are you going to get any fresher than that? I'm getting him off the boat. We take him right out and eat him out of the shell. Yeah. It's unbelievable.
Well, yeah, I mean, that brings up a good point because, you know, not everybody – you know, my wife got her PhD at Georgetown. So we lived in the D.C. area for a couple of years, you know, spent our winters out there. And that's kind of where I really started direct marketing my fish, because it is kind of an amazing place to start a business. There's the East Coast is also much more awake to, you know, food sourcing, and there's, you know, there's the affluence to support it, because it often does cost more. Where was I going with that? Anyway, yeah, that was an amazing place to start that business. And you know, I was at farmers markets for a while, and it was an amazing opportunity to talk to a lot of customers, you know, and, you know, people are working so hard out there. Everybody's got the flash car, everybody's got the flash house, you know, the two kids in Ivy League school or whatever it is. It seems like all my customers were those folks, but, you know, to meet with me somewhere to get their fish, it's like, oh yeah, hey, I can meet you between like 9 a.m. and 9:03 a.m., you know, and I laugh, and then they're like, no, like, that's really my window, you know? And
that's,
I'm like,
how
is that your schedule? You know, and it's, you have like two corporate lawyers, you know, two lawyers that work for the UN or some big corporation or something like that. And that's their life. And so I acknowledge that not everybody is going to get out and go foraging. Although I think that would bring a lot of joy to just about anybody's life who cares about, you know, where their food comes from. But I did kind of see myself as helping to fill that gap, where if you can't get out there and do that stuff yourself, at least getting really, really close to it, you know, in terms of being able to talk to the dude or talk to the woman or whatever, and then being able to eat the food. That's the next best thing. And so the crusade of getting everybody to, you know, go catch their own salmon, all their own food, that's not really the direction to go. But, you know, educating people and just bringing them amazing food and educating them and telling them about it, you know, that's a huge step in that direction. And I did my, my education is in journalism and art, actually. And
oh, good.
I
so you became a fisherman. That's a good idea.
I know exactly.
No, it worked out great.
No, but that's the journey. You know, I don't regret it at all. It's
totally
it's,
good.
It's really brought a lot of perspective to my
brother. I went to school for music theater at first. Like, I totally understand it, and then I went to culinary school.
Oh yeah, yeah. So the career that hates money.
Yeah, it's perfect. It means I work in restaurants, which means I can make you a steak, and I can show you my great jazz hands all at the same time. It's amazing.
I mean, my master's thesis was all about wild food, you know. I found a way to integrate it.
Dude, but so this is the thing. Yeah. So when it comes down to doing what you do and people want to be a part of it, can you talk about that a little bit, or just give us like a loose rundown of how, you know, I'm a private chef. I want to buy fish from you. How does that work?
Well, I've never really sold fish to chefs because they're such a pain in the ass haggling on price and things like that. Yeah.
Yeah, that's the problem. You're not selling to a private chef. Private chefs have money, dude.
Oh, I see. Spending someone else's money, maybe.
Saying that because my clients listen and they're incredible people and I love them so, so much. They've changed my life. I mean, Dave, well, listen. Wait. Hang on a second, Trav. I gotta play a little cleanup here for a second. Dave, you can vouch for that. I said that off the show too, right?
Yeah, he definitely has.
Yeah, all right, cool. Sorry, go ahead, Trav.
Oh, no, yeah. No, I mean, you know, part of it is like just to my whole thing now with, you know, doing my customers are only getting fish that I caught. All it's 100% transparency, and I hate to say that because everybody says that even when it's not true. But like doing this interview, you know, I don't have to shy away from any interviews, any question, anything. Yeah. It feels so good to be Excellent. Doing what I'm doing. Nice. I'm so proud of it.
And you're talking to a group of people you're talking to a group of people right now in chefs and what we do. We understand the cost for good ingredients. Dave runs one of the biggest restaurants actually his restaurant is the crown jewel in one of the top casinos in the entire country. He understands what it means to spend money on good food, right, Dave?
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
So there's no shame in it, man. I mean, listen, when I go to somebody's house, I'm going to charge you. It costs money. Like, it's not free,
right?
You know?
Right, right. Well, I mean, that's kind of my whole thing is I just want to catch less and charge, you know? I mean, I don't know. I like to feed people, you know? I know you probably feel like that too.
100%.
I like my customers to buy salmon for their pregnant wives. Like, I always say that because I am behind salmon, wild salmon, 100%. Like, there is no bigger cheerleader for wild salmon than me. Like, I've sold shit that I'm not behind, and I'm not proud of that, but that is not the case for wild fish. You know, like, you're pregnant, your wife is pregnant, feed her salmon. No one disagrees. You know, the FDA is a pretty low bar for recommendations, but they certainly don't disagree. No one disagrees with that. You know, your kid starts eating solid food, wild salmon, you know. With other certain other fish, you know, I wouldn't say that, but wild salmon, it's just like, I don't know, I'm so behind it, and it feels great to, you know, just be behind it like that. And, you know, I do like to tell the part of the story that, you know, when I first started direct marketing, the way that it's easy to do direct marketing as a fisherman is you catch your fish, you, at the end of the day, you offload them to the man, as I call him. And, you know, they write you a receipt at the end of the season. You get paid your measly sum for all your beautiful fish and your hard work. And it's all gone off into the machine and then, you know, on its way to Safeway or whatever. You know, if I can just catch less of those fish and charge more for it, then that's really the way to go. And yeah. Anyway, so
well, it takes more for you to catch them and ship them off to somebody than a giant, you know, a farm or a giant company to do it. It totally makes a lot of sense. So
it's just so much work. I mean, I'm fishing all day and then staying up all night. And, you know, I set my prices not based on the market, based on like what I'm willing to do it for.
You got
to
start doing some Instagram lives when you're cleaning fish and stuff, man.
Yeah. Yeah. Looking at the ocean, listening to music, filleting fish.
Yeah. Right.
I got a great thing from my fillet counter. Nice. But when I first started, you know, the way that it's really easy to direct market as a fisherman is by buying it back from the man, because they'll sell you fish back and then you can resell that. And that's the way like almost all my competition does it. And it is wild Alaskan fish, and the person you're buying it from is a fisherman, but it's not their fish and they didn't catch it. And so that's something like I like to tell people about that. I try not to be real negative about it, especially since I used to do that same thing. And I got tired of, you know, it's easy to do because you fish, you sell them, and then you go home and you sleep. There's no processing. There's no logistics. There's no shipping to customers. There's no, you know, any of that kind of stuff. And so, you know, I kind of got tired of, I don't want to say living the lie. That's a little bit hyperbolic, I think. But, you know, there's a lot of questions you don't want to field. You know, hey, did you catch this fish? No, I don't know who this was caught by. It was processed in a factory somewhere. I am a fisherman, But people assume that because they're buying wild Alaskan fish from a fisherman, that that fisherman caught it. And that's something that I like to tell people, because it's an important distinction for me, and I think it is for customers as well.
Well, it's not a bad assumption, to think too. I mean, I would think the same thing, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And I don't blame people, you know? They don't know the questions to ask.
Well, talk about your ordering process, because the way you do it's interesting. Like I said, you ship out 4 times a year. How does it work with you? Like, you know, I mean, if you don't feel, you don't get a price you don't want to, but I just want to hear more about like how that process works. People sign up. Do they say, I'd like to have 20 pounds, 100 pounds? I mean, or is it like, here's some choices? How does that work?
Yeah. So you can just, so I do 4 seasonal catches, and those are, the catches that are really based on a specific season are the spring catch, which is halibut and sable fish only. And I'm 100% upfront. I commercially fished halibut for years, but the halibut that I do not have a commercial license for halibut or sable fish. So those are caught by a friend of mine, and he sells them to me, and I sell them on so that my customers can have a little more choice beyond salmon. All the salmon is caught by me, is filleted by me. And so I like to be completely honest about that. So the spring catch is based purely on halibut sable fish opens up usually in about March. And so by about May, there's enough fish coming across the dock that that I can send some of those to customers. So that one's based on a true seasonality, you know, seasonal catch. And then the summer catch is the summer catch. I mean, I ship it technically in the fall, but that's everything that I've caught over the summer. So I'm not catching a fish, putting it in a box and sending it out. I'm putting my fish together in my freezer, boxing it up, and then I actually send it back east because most of my customers are back east.
Yeah.
And that's kind of, you know, I can ship to customers anywhere, but that's kind of where I focus my attention. So yeah, customers can pre-order any of the catches. And I ship 4 times per year, which is May, October, December, which is the Christmas catch. And then winter is in March, and that's the next one coming up. And that one is just kind of a sweep up from the previous year. You know, hey, I got 100 pounds of sockeye still on hand from the previous summer's catch. That's available over the winter catch. Because there is, I mean, I call it the winter catch, but there is no winter catch for me and, you know, not really for anyone.
Now, does that go quickly? Is this something you got to sign up for right away?
Well, this year, and I sure hate to say this, but this year I have like 100 pounds of fish, which will go in like a millisecond.
That's nothing.
But that'll ship in March, but people can still pre-order for the spring, which ships in May. And then folks can pre-order for any of the catches. It just, you know, may not ship for quite a while. And so it ships when it ships. But, it, you know, if you pre-order for the summer catch in February, it's not going to ship till October. And a lot of my customers do that just to get it out of the way. And then, you know, hey, it shows up in your door in the fall and you're all psyched, but you can forget about it in the meantime. So that, you know, that is, it's not as easy as it, you know, it's a different experience than jumping on Amazon and buying something and it shows up the next day. And in some ways I kind of like that, you know, I feel like, gosh, you know, I'm sort of leaving money on the table. I'm leaving customers out high and dry because they can't just get fish whenever they want. But, you know, it's the reality of what I do. And it also, I think it reminds people that, you know, food shouldn't be as cheap as it is. We live in a world where food is too cheap and people have this distorted reality of what food is. And food should be seasonal. You should be eating things when it's coming 100%. Across the dock or coming across the table. And you can't just get whatever you want whenever you want. And if you want the best food, you got to wait a little bit for it. And sometimes it's sold out. And so it's you know, it's always going to slow my business down a little bit, but it's another way of reminding people that it's the real deal.
Dude, so I got to ask you, man, it's come across a couple of times here in our talking, and actually our good friend Grill Mama, our mutual friend Melissa, she's one of my favorite people in the entire world. And
she's
the best. She's absolutely the best. And she's asked me, she put a question in here and was just curious about how long we talked earlier in the show about how long you've been doing this and how long you've been fishing, but how about selling? How long has that been going on?
Well, I get wound up when I talk about wild food and all this stuff, so I kind of I leave little tidbits.
I didn't notice.
Yeah. So, So, you know, about 10 years ago, I started direct marketing, which means I had been fishing all through. But, you know, as I said, when you're fishing, you know, you're usually just selling to the man and that's it. Direct marketing means that you're selling directly to customers. And 99.9% of commercial fishermen are not direct marketing. So that's, I think that's another thing that a lot of people don't understand. They think if you're fishing, you're also selling to customers, but that's not true for almost everybody. A very small percentage of people choose to sell directly to customers. So about 10 years ago, I started direct marketing, which means going straight to customers. And I was doing what I sort of rail against now, which is buying fish back from my processor, which, you know, I was a commercial fisherman then. I was commercial fishing, but that wasn't my fish. And I never lied to customers about that, but it never felt quite right, you know, because it was, you weren't catching it, filleting it, and selling it, which is what I do now. And so my dream at that time was always to, you know, what I usually say is make good on the promise of Fisherman Direct, because Fisherman Direct is this hollow term that gets thrown around social media, and it's like, oh, hashtag Fisherman Direct, you know, are you filleting and catching this fish and sending it to your customers? No, you're not. I know that. And so you know, trying to make good on the promise of Fisherman right. Direct was a big part of it. And so it's a lot of work, though. You know, it makes commercial fishing seem easy. Commercial fishing, you know, it's like, I mean, I'm not going to say it's easy, but and I'm a set netter, which, you know, some people would argue is one of the easier ways to fish. But, you know, you go out, you catch your fish, and you sell them to the man, and then you go home and you know, crash out or whatever.
Your day.
But you're processing. It's this whole other layer of stuff, and it doesn't stop in the fall. It goes all winter. You know, you're always doing things. And so, you know, and plus, if you want to process, you don't just, like, set up a table and start filleting fish. You know, the FDA flies out to my facility. Like, they take that shit seriously. And, you know, it makes me nervous every time, but I got 100% last year, so feeling pretty good about that one on my inspection.
That's what's up.
So I was doing what I kind of rail against now, but it also, you know, gave me the perspective on the whole thing. And then as soon as I could, basically sink the money into building my own freezer, a setup, all the money, I spent about $70,000 on doing this. And partly because you're in the middle of nowhere, you got to charter planes to fly your heavy stuff out there and, you know, all that stuff. I was able to move into that in 2016. And then from that moment on, I launched my new business on Kickstarter. The business I founded in DC was one that I sold there. And then I had a clean break and I launched on Kickstarter and raised $102,000.
Wow.
And sunk that money into getting set up out there and, you know, haven't looked back since, and every fish since then has been fish that I've caught, I've filleted, and all outward appearances, the fish got way better, but customers may not have noticed a difference besides the fish getting way better, but my whole world changed when I started doing that, and I just love talking about it now. I love doing what I'm doing. It's just like I'm 100% in. Before, it's like, oh, retail. Yeah, retail's real fulfilling, you know.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Dave, tell people where they can find a little more information about Salmon and Sable.
All right, you can head over to their website where pre-order starts February 1st at salmonandsable.com and check them out on Instagram at salmonandsable.
Dave, what do you think, man? You hear this man talking about his fish and everything. I mean, does it really kind of make you feel like, I don't know, as a whole, we're buying fish wrong?
Yeah, I felt that way for a while, actually, because anytime I get fish, it's frozen, or a lot of salmon you see is pink because they put dye in it.
Is that true? Is that true, Traveler? Do people dye their salmon?
Farmed fish is dyed, yeah.
Oh, come on.
Yep.
Because farmed fish, if you don't dye it, is like this putrid gray color. And, wild salmon gets its color from its food, and they're eating, sockeye salmon. The reason the color is so insane beautiful is because they're eating the lowest on the food chain. They're eating little krill, little tiny, tiny, you know, plankton basically. And, those are tiny, tiny crustaceans, right. Zooplankton, and they have pink little shells. And then, the other species, silver salmon, king salmon, they're eating one step higher on the food chain. They're eating little tiny fish, and those fish eat the krill. So that's why their color is a little bit lighter, because they're eating a little tiny bit higher on the food chain. But those farm fish are eating, you know, corn and you know, sardine meal and whatever else. And so they have to diet. And that's a pretty repulsive idea, just on top of everything else.
So, man, I'll tell you, I had a my neighbor behind me. They're amazing people. They're professors. They teach biology and things and marine biology. And they had a sabbatical, and they went and spent it in Alaska, which was amazing. And they went salmon fishing, and when they came home, they brought back, you know, pink salmon, king salmon, sockeye, and had a tasting, which was it was so much fun and pretty informative, especially as a chef when you have a piece of salmon and they're all cooked. It's different types and they're all cooked the exact same way, very simple, and to taste those different flavors in it, man. When you do that, what's your favorite type of salmon, and how many different types do you actually fish for?
Well, there's five species of wild Pacific salmon, and I fish for three of them right now. We catch all five species, actually, but I sell three species because we just don't catch enough of the other two species. So I catch sockeye salmon, silver salmon, and king salmon. And there's a number of different names for each species. Sockeye can also be called red salmon. Silver salmon can also be called coho. Yeah. And some people call king salmon Chinook salmon, but that's more like a Pacific Northwest kind of a thing. People in Alaska usually don't say that. So king salmon is the highest fat, and it's also the most expensive, according to the way I charge and everybody else. Not because it's fattier, but because it's just naturally less abundant. It's not endangered or anything. It's just there's less of them out there, and so
they're big, you know, right?
They can be, yeah. I mean, the biggest one I've caught in where I fish now is about 40 pounds, but the world record for sport caught is like 97 pounds, and the world record commercial is 126 pounds, if I'm not mistaken.
That's a big fish.
When I was a kid, I caught a 60-pounder, and it was bigger than I was.
Wow.
But, yeah, I mean, kings are just amazing. You know, you're pulling sockeye over the side, right and left with the net, and then all of a sudden, you know, you're in the zone working 20 hours, and then all of a sudden, a salmon comes over the side that basically looks like the other salmon. It's silver. It looks like a salmon, except instead of, you know, as long as your forearm and weighing 10 pounds, it weighs 30 pounds, and it's, you know, bigger than your kid, and throws you for a loop, and it's definitely exciting because it's a delicious beautiful fish, yeah. So, you know, sockeye has that amazing color. You can't beat that color with any wild food, in my opinion. It's the most beautiful wild food out there, right. Certainly wild protein out there.
A little more gamey than some of the other species, right?
What's that?
A slightly more gamey than some of the other species, right?
Well, that's one way of putting it. I say salmon-y. Okay. Some people say fishy, but to me, fishy is any piece of fish you've let, you know, it's crappy fish, basically. It doesn't matter right. What species it is, it's left around. Yeah, so it's, you know, if people like their food to, you know, if they love the flavor of salmon, like you want your salmon to taste like salmon, get sockeye because it tastes salmon-y and delicious. Mm-hmm. It tastes like beautiful wild food. It puts the wild in wild food. And I mean, I personally wouldn't use the word gamey, but that's how I describe it. And then king salmon is a mild flavor and it's the most fatty. And it has that lighter color, and it's delicious. I mean, it's really rich. You know, you can OD it, and you can OD on it for sure. You know, you eat six ounces of it instead of a solid half a pound like I would with sockeye. And then coho is kind of halfway in between. It's a lighter color. It looks a lot like king salmon. It has a similar flavor profile in terms of being a mild flavor. It's just a little bit less fatty than king salmon, but it's more fatty than sockeye. So I mean, coho is one of my favorites. Like if I was paying for fish, coho is really where I would go personally. When I go sockeye, I kind of, you know, I'll make up a nice sauce to put on it. I'm not just going to salt and pepper it personally, but a lot of my customers do because they really want that strong salmon right. flavor. But me personally, I'll usually put a little bit more sauce on it, something on top of it. But if I'm doing king or silver, I'm just salt and pepper on the grill. I mean, you don't put anything on those fish, in my opinion.
Well, it's a great segue, man. I got two more for you. And so here in the Northeast, one of the things we fish for a lot is striper, which is striped bass.
Yeah.
Delicious fish, man. I've caught a 65 pound one before just on the line. It's a big ass fish, man. It was enormous. And it's fun. I mean, God,
I caught a 60 pound king, so then you came back with a 65 pound fish.
Well, it was 65. I remember because we weighed it.
Pounds, you said 75.
Stop it. But it was a big ass fish. But, you know, one of the things I thought was interesting, though, is on the boat, we were talking to the captain of the boat. It's a guy we go out with all the time. He's amazing, fifth generation captain. And, you know, I'm a chef 25 years, won awards, et cetera. And I asked him, I said, Captain, so when you're doing these and you catch these fish and you take some home, how do you cook them? Like, how do you eat them? And for me, like these guys who do this for a living, such as yourself, I mean, you've cooked more than I ever will when it comes to, you know, sockeye salmon. And for him, for doing striped bass. And he broke it down for me, and he was like, you can just cut it really simply, and you can steam it. And if you steam it very lightly, it just at just below boiling, and you add a little salt to the water. And he was like, but you keep it out of the water over a steamer. He's like, it almost tastes like lobster. And I was like, get out of town. Stop it. And he's like, huh. He's like, all right, try it. And I did it, and I'll be a son of a bitch. That tastes exactly like lobster meat when I did it that way. I could not. He's like, that's the only way I'll do it now. I'll do it like that, or I'll grill it, and that's it. So for you, when it comes to sockeye salmon, you, as a fisherman, your entire life with this, how do you cook it, and what's your favorite way to serve it?
Well, I don't know if you know Jack Arnold, but he's a great grill master guy, and I got a recipe from him that, you know, anything sweet with sockeye is good.
Right.
But I got a recipe from him that's like so simple, I can't believe I didn't think of it earlier. Just maple syrup on top. It's Ooh. I mean, you're adding some sugar there for sure, to maybe knocking down some of the health benefits. But okay. Anything sweet with sockeye is good. I mean, it can be like a homemade,
but
you know,
natural sugar.
What's that?
It's a very natural sugar.
Yeah. No, I mean, like, you know, if I do a lot of jams and stuff from wild berries, and just like any kind of delicious jam you have. I mean, it sounds weird, but anything like that is great. Like, people in Alaska will take, you know, rhubarb jam, rhubarb syrup, whatever they make with rhubarb, a lot of rhubarb in Alaska, spread that on top, cook it up. But this thing I did with Jack Arnold's recipe, the only thing I added to it was cumin, and it's just butter melted with hot syrup. And then if you put some cumin in there, that's really outstanding. You grill the fish, and then you just kind of pour that over at the last minute. And it just like blows your mind. I mean, it kind of gives it like a smoked salmon sort of a feel, because there's a little bit of sweetness to the smoked salmon. So
butter, cumin, and maple syrup. Dave, is that going to be a special tomorrow?
I think so.
Don't forget the butter. Yeah, butter, maple syrup, and cumin. Yeah.
It sounds amazing, and I totally get it. The cumin and the maple syrup sound amazing together. Are you kidding me? What a great idea.
Yeah. No, it's unbelievable. And it's fun to cook, too, because like, if you're doing it on something, you can pour the hot syrup right over top, and it sizzles, and it boils, and it bubbles, and gets all crispy on the edges. It's out of this world. But I smoke a lot of my sockeye, too. I'm usually not just sockeye with salt and pepper. But when it comes to the king and the silver, I'm just salt and pepper on the grill, because those fish are just kind of what I'm after personally. Perfect. But again, a lot of my customers, they're like, man, I just want sockeye, salt and pepper all the way.
Perfect.
It's just personal preference. But so,
do you have any kind
what
of...
What I like to do with my...
Yeah, please. No, please. Sorry.
With my silver and my king is I like to bring a lot of flavors in on the side. Like I'll do like a relish or like a salad on the side, which is... like really nice chopped up cherry tomatoes. You know, like cherry tomatoes can be good and they can be crappy, and usually they're crappy, but really good ones. And then you get some,
amazing.
Yeah. And then you get some fresh fruit that's firm, like firm kiwis, firm mangoes. It can even be grapes or nectarines, but it's got to be kind of firm and real fresh. And then you can chop up some real coarse basil in there and mix that up and squeeze like a blood orange over the top, something like that, or even just a regular orange, but a blood orange is nice. And then if you want to kind of go a little Southeast Asian, Vietnamese, you can add some like chopped up mint to it. But I'll put that on the side, and that like ultra, and you just mix it like once, because you don't want it to get slimy. And you just put that on the side. And so, you know, the super fresh taste of that salad, whatever you want to call it, relish, with just really simply minimally cooked salt and pepper king or silver is just unbelievable. Yeah, and then sometimes I'll do like a cilantro pesto as well. I don't know, if I put on a feed, I like to put out like grilled salmon with nothing on it, and then a whole bunch of colorful, beautiful condiments on the side. Like
little
the
side dishes for it, little side sauces and whatnot. Yeah.
And then if people are just bananas for salmon, they just eat it straight up. And then people, you know, I have to be honest with myself, not everybody likes salmon, but if you bring in some awesome flavors, then you know, people will dig into that. So I like to kind of mix and match and let people make a artistic arrangement on their plate with whatever flavors they choose.
All right. So look, I'm going to send you, I'll text it to you and I'll send it to you. But here, one of the things I'm doing these days is I take a little salmon and I take my pestle and mortar, or I'll just do it in a bowl, and I'll take a microplane or a grater, whatever you have, and I'll grate, you know, about a thumb sized piece of ginger, garlic, cilantro, salt, pepper, olive oil, a little red chili, right? I grate it all up, and I put it in olive oil, and I squeeze a pinch of lemon juice into it.
Yeah.
And then I'll take that and actually brush the salmon with that, so it kind of has this, like, you know, kind of mushy compote on top of it. Then I'll just simply put it right on top of a sheet pan. And then I'll take a bunch of vegetables. Broccoli rabe is great with it, but chopped up nicely. Broccoli rabe, onions, got to have onions with it. And some slivered garlic, and I toss that with the rest of the dressing, right? And and roast it in the oven, or you could do it over a fire. And brother, let me tell you what, it makes me have to go to church every single time I do it. It is next level.
Is it kind of, I missed a few of the ingredients, is it kind of a little Southeast Asian-y inspired with some of the ingredients? Lime?
It's interesting because it's ginger.
So no lime.
Ginger, lemon zest, a pinch of lemon juice, salt, pepper, garlic, red chili.
Okay. All right, I got it.
And you just kind of you kind of mush it all up together, and it makes almost like a paste, like an oily paste, and it's just unbelievable on that fish. It goes so well with it. Oh, you got to try. I'm gonna text it to you so you can try it when you're back at fishing camp, man. dude, you're such a fun guy to talk to. Dave, tell people they can find more information about him and get him ready to go.
All right, you can check them out on Instagram at Salmon and Sable, and then check their website out, salmonandsable.com, where pre-order starts February 1st.
And the name, Salmon and Sable, where'd that come from, brother?
Oh, I don't know. You know, I sold that other business I had, and I needed to launch a new name, and I sell salmon and sable fish. So sable fish is a really delicious fish that, again, it's caught by that friend of mine. That's not one that I used to fish that, but I don't anymore. And so it's a beautiful fish. It's the king of the white fish, in my opinion. If people haven't tried that, everybody needs to try it because it is unbelievable. Nice. Like white fish can be like, white fish is white fish, but sable fish is like the salmon of white fish. It's super rich and fatty. And then, you know, salmon is salmon. So sounded awesome. And those are two beautiful species representing the salmon and the white fish.
There you go. Listen, man, I want to tell you right now, Grill Mama's throwing love at you right now. She's enjoying hearing you talk. And, of course, our buddy Chief Jeremy Flake of the U.S. Navy is enjoying hearing you talk. Brother, I want to take 2 seconds here, man, before we get you out of here and get you on down the road and say thank you for supporting us for what we did for our event. It means more than you'll ever know, the fact that you would be a part of that and send us fish that you caught yourself. That's your hard work. Coming to us to help us support U.S. Navy for our event that we did for the end of the year was incredible, and the product's amazing. And honestly, we can't thank you enough. I can't tell you how much it meant to us. So thank you very, very much, Traveler. We really appreciate your help with that.
Yeah, you're welcome. I was happy to be a part of it. Good cause, good people. I like having a fish in the hands of people that know what to do with it and know how to appreciate it. So that's its own reward.
We crushed it. It was amazing, and the guys loved it. And honestly, it was a true honor. And you know, when you meet the right chefs in the world, you know, these guys understand what it takes to get this food. They understand what it means. And I was just a quick story. I was I worked under Sean Brock, and Sean Brock is, you know, in the chef world, everyone knows who Sean Brock is, but. As a guy who appreciates where farm food comes from more than anybody else I've ever known. And Sean would tell me, he's like, you have a responsibility as a chef, as a cook, as a person who prepares food, to understand where the food comes from, understand what it takes to get that food in your hand, understand what it takes to make that food. He goes, that's your responsibility. Because if you don't care, nobody else is going to care.
Yeah.
He says, so that's on you. So every dish you put out, understand what it takes to put that dish on the table, what it comes from, you know, where it comes from, what it takes to catch it, what it takes to grow it, all of those things.
Yeah.
I took that shit to heart, and every single thing, and you know, it means a lot to me when I understand where it comes from. I always ask where things come from, and right now I'm figuring out what I'm going to say to you when we get off the phone here so I can text you and say, hey, put me on pre-order for 100 pounds of salmon. So I'm trying to figure out how that's going to work.
Well,
but
hey, I'll do you one better. Come out to fish camp, and I mean this because I've told people to come out to fish camp before and they never come. So come out to fish camp. You and I will catch all your own fish. We can even make up a special sticker for it. I'll send you out the door with I'll bury you in salmon, basically.
Okay, so here's the thing. You're talking to a person who all right, I gotta make it short. Sorry, but so my father-in-law and my brother-in-law and myself and my other brother-in-law, like we've been talking about taking my father-in-law fishing. You know, he's 70-ish right now. He loves to fish. He's great. He's in great shape. He's awesome. And so we've been talking about taking an Alaskan salmon trip for a very long time now. And, you know, my brother-in-law's done well. He's like, let's make it happen. And so he's like, I'll pay for it. Let's do it. And so after this conversation, don't be surprised if I text you and, and I'm like, hey, brother, we're in. Where do we go?
Well, by the way, people wanna, make sure they you have catch beer. Make sure you have beer. That's not how I do it, but it is an experience for sure. You know, if you 50 miles an hour wind, rain blowing sideways, pulling fish over the side. If you're into that, I got plenty.
You make it sound so
sometimes
great.
It's sunny. I do have a sauna. I built a sauna. It's a badass sauna. So there's that.
So there's that. Yeah. Where do we sleep at fishing camp with you? What does that work? Do we share a cot in the shack with you? Because that's the price of admission itself.
We're drowning in salmon and bears, and so camping outside isn't really an option. Going to the outhouse, you're kind of taking your life in your own hands. But I got space. You know, it's halfway between civilized living in a home and camping. It's not horrible, but it's not luxurious either. Not a lodge experience, I'll put it that way.
You mean you don't have like a concierge that can bring us wine when we get back in from fishing and stuff? No, none of that.
Yeah, I started offering like a fish camp experience just to see if I get anybody to come out, and that's what people have asked me about that, and I'm like, no.
Hey, listen, I'm not joking. Don't be surprised if you get a text from me. I'm just telling you. I'm giving you the heads up. It may happen. If I could talk these guys into it.
I want to share fish camp with people. Like, honestly, as I said, I want to share it with people. And it's hard to get out there. That's what, you know, I don't want to say what separates the men from the boys, but, you know, there it is.
Do you help organize that in the cost? Like, help organize how to get out there, at least point in the right direction?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it's not that it's, like, impossible to get out there. It's just it's not particularly cheap to get out there, and it takes a number of flights, and you can kind of get weathered in various places. You know, it doesn't happen that often, but you can get stuck in the charming metropolis of King Salmon, Alaska, for maybe a day or two, and you'd certainly get a taste of local color. That's for sure.
I got to ask you this: is it true? Like, is all of Alaska dry? Can we get alcohol out there? Because that's what's important. It's all about what's important to me.
Oh, I see. I see how it is. Yeah. Pilot Point is moist or tepid or whatever they call it, where you can have it, but you can't sell it.
Okay. Wait, so how the fuck do you get it?
You make it.
Well, you distill a salmon. So first you milk a salmon.
Oh, Jesus. And then,
no. there's a lot of dry communities. So ours is moist, which means that you can drink, but you're not allowed to sell it or buy it.
It's moist, so. Dave.
Moist.
I dig it.
There you go. Oh, my God. Trevor, dude, you're so fun to talk to, man. I wish nothing but the best for you. Again, thank you for all your help with our event. I love your enthusiasm. I love your energy. You're a good brother, Brian, and we really appreciate you taking the time to come on here tonight and talk with us.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thank you for caring about wild fish and wild food from Alaska, and IW a wild salmon warrior.
I love that.
Badges in the mail.
Dude, I'm a WSW. That's what's up. That's going to be a hashtag. Let me tell you what. That shit's not going away either, just so you know. WSW. But Dave's not, right? He didn't get there. Dave's not there yet, right?
I got to talk to Dave a little bit more.
Okay, good, good. That's the right answer.
Hey, we'll see who goes to fish camp first.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. Is that right? I got some PTO racked up.
Right on. Traveler,
hey,
man.
You can show up right now, actually. Yeah, I won't charge much rent. You know, it's probably underwater. You'll probably be eaten by something or other.
Jesus Christ, you're not even there.
I had someone ask me if my fish camp was like, so is that like a timeshare? And I'm like, yeah, $1,000 a month, you're in. You can go, you can have September through April. It's prime.
Dude,
don't have to worry about getting sunburned.
Is that a timeshare? Get the fuck out of here. Hey, Traveler, man, I appreciate it, brother. I'm going to text you a thank you at the end of the show. But, hey, thank you so much, man. Seriously, you're awesome. Your product is absolutely incredible. Much respect for you. And, dude, you're a good brother. That's all I got to say for you. You're a good brother. That's it.
All right, man. I appreciate it. You too. Good to connect with you guys.
All right, man. We'll talk to you on down the road.
All right. Have a good one.
See you, buddy. There he goes, Dave. Traveler. From Salmon and Sable. How about that guy, huh? That's a man's fucking man right there, right?
Yeah, totally. Yeah, like a philosophy and a dream and just made that shit happen.
Yeah, seriously, like, that guy's awesome. That guy's amazing.
Definitely, man. Yeah, the whole story of it's just kind of crazy how he just seriously just made it all come together.
And he lives in a shack while he salmon fishes. I mean, here's the thing. I was trying to get a little more information on about, like, you know, ordering and stuff, but I got a feeling that it's such a small amount coming up. That's why he was kind of a little hesitant to talk about that.
Possibly, but I mean, what, February 1st? Jump on and find out.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And I'm telling you what, I'm definitely going to get on the pre-order for the next one because, dude, I mean, I will use it. My people love that stuff, you know?
Yeah, especially since, you know, it's wild and hand-caught. It's not going to be anything that's died because it's not farmed.
So I just talk to the dude who catches it. Like,
yeah.
I'll tell him.
You know
I
exactly
text,
where it's coming from.
We can text the dude that just caught this fish if you want. Like, that's how awesome it is. I don't know.
Yeah.
What a great guy, man. This is the guys like that and having companies like that on this program is what makes me feel so good about doing it when we, you know, have the shows that are all dick jokes. So when we have guys like him on who are just incredible, it's a big shout out. Tell them one more time where you can find more information about Salmon and Sable. Man, I got to stop running my mouth and get those plugs out for him.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, go to their website, salmonandsable.com. Pre-order starts February 1st and Instagram at Salmon and Sable.
Dude, so fun.
And I totally wrote down that butter maple syrup cumin. I was like, I'm gonna do that. I'm gonna run a special.
Dude, I just thinking about it in my head, what a good idea. It sounds like it would totally work.
Oh, definitely.
Fucking,
I think so.
Yeah, I'm not a big maple syrup fan, but like I get it. The cumin and maple syrup, what a win, right?
Definitely. And then some sort of potato, run it.
Yeah, and for our homie Chief Lake who's listening, bro, you could run that shit at the galley, man, no doubt about it. You could, no doubt about, make that happen. So, look, we're going to get on down the road, man. It's been a late night. I apologize for the technical difficulties. I'm going to delete the first half of the show that we recorded, and we'll just go with this one as being the show for tonight. Does that sound good?
Yeah, I think so. It was a pretty solid recovery. So,
yeah, I think it actually was a very solid recovery. Good call on that. I think you're right about that. Anyway, check it out, man. Dave, you're the man. I appreciate you. Next week, I just reached out to our good friend, Katie Aquino, a.k.a. Miss Metaverse, the futurist, to talk about future food. We check in once a year with her. Hopefully, we're going to make that happen next week to find out what the newest things are going to be in the future of food. I think last year she was telling us about machines that made burgers or something. You remember that?
Yeah, it was the burger. It was like animatronic or auto. I don't know. Is it automated? Animatronic? How does that work? I guess it has to be like a cartoon bear
now.
To be animatronic, right?
But you're just saying words. You're not even.
I'm
like,
trying. No, because it was robotic. That's the word.
So I think we're going to hopefully have her on next week. We're trying to figure it out, you guys. My schedule's changed a little bit here at work, so we're trying to figure out what works the best. So stay tuned. Check out them Instagrams, and you'll figure out when we're going to have it. But Dave, thanks for joining me tonight, as always, brother.
Anytime, bro. Thanks for having me on.
You got it, man. Big shout out to our good friends over there at Salmon and Sable. Make sure you follow them on Instagram. And, of course, if you want to grab some fish from them, that date's coming up in February. Anyway, thanks for checking out the show tonight. Big shout out to Chef Dave. My name is Chef Plum. And folks, remember, food is one of the most important things we have in life. Everything important in life happens around food. Let's give it the time it deserves. Peace!
Why are we arguing? If you just shut the fuck up for 30 seconds, you might learn something.
Welcome to Plum Love Foods Live, the number one live audio culinary industry show for chefs by chefs. Hosted by multi-time Food Network winner, award-winning chef, TV host and global icon, and national treasure, at least in his mind, Chef Plum. So close that saute station, make sure the grill is off, and grab that shift drink. Because we're about to mess up your mise en place. Here's Chef Plum.